Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Milwaukee has enacted its own sales tax. Coming up, what this means for your wallet and the next steps city officials plan to take. Plus, how does Milwaukee's new tax compare to other major cities? And we look ahead to next week's special election for an open seat in the 24th Assembly District. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 14th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, this week's show is going to be heavily focused on Milwaukee. And why? It's because the city council approved their 2% municipal sales tax. We've talked about this many before, but Mayor Johnson even called this a historic moment for the Common Council, as it was kind of uncertain how many people would vote for or against it. But in the end, it was a 12-3 vote. You can see her on the slide who voted yes, and the three that voted a no, which is Pratt, Cogs, and Chambers. And now, when you do the math here, this is what we kind of want to talk about, is just putting into perspective what this 2% increase will mean for Milwaukeeans. Now, basic math, if you spend $100, you're going to be taxed two extra dollars. But there's also this, now the next chapter is whether the Milwaukee Common Council will also approve their 0.4% sales tax increase to 0.9%. So if they do that, the total sales tax in the city of Milwaukee would jump to 7.9%, because that's adding already the statewide 5% sales tax. So when you look at that, that's how we got that final number. So now there's all these questions of, well, what's taxed and what's not? So let's just take a look at what are some of the things that are already taxed under the state sales tax. There was nothing added to this that Milwaukee did. This is already what you're seeing on receipts across the state. Things like clothing, computers, any repair services like lawn mowing services, cigarettes, furniture, cable TV, lodging, amusement if you go to a ball game or go to an athletic event, like I mentioned. So what is exempt? Let's also tell people what is exempt. Prescription drugs. Not over-the-counter stuff like cold medicine, food like your groceries, but there are some exemptions like candy and soft drinks are taxed under the sales tax. Medical equipment is exempt, and medical records. Now, thinking about the total number of this, Milwaukee in size compared to some other states when you're looking at their sales tax, Milwaukee is about the 31st largest city in the country. Some other similarly sized cities like Portland, Oregon, and Louisville, Kentucky have no sales tax at all. Others like Albuquerque and Kansas City and Montana have higher rates than Milwaukee. So while this is kind of a sticker shock to some people, when you put into perspective, there are other similar sized cities that have lower or higher sales tax as well. First, let's just take a listen from Mayor Johnson, who knew this was going to be a tough vote for the council, but kind of said this was historic in nature at the end. So let's just take a listen from him and dive more into this.
Today, the Common Council took a very important and extraordinary vote, a vote that I think is probably on par with the vote to adopt the city charter back in 1846. And the Common Council did what I've told many of you over the course of the past several weeks. When the chips are down and we need a big deal done, the Common Council will step through and do exactly that.
So after the vote, now we are looking ahead to a possible legal action. Several alders hinted to it. The mayor has kind of been very quiet on whether he supports it, but initially, I mean, he's one of those individuals, as many alders are, that say, hey, we don't like these other provisions that are tied to this entire deal, which basically gave them the authority to raise their sales tax. But there's several other things in the bill, like limiting the city's control over the fire police commission. The city is also not allowed to spend money on streetcar expansion or anything dealing with the streetcar. Programs that promote diversity, equity, inclusion. They have a hands-off approach. They can't do that. So these are some of the things that, looking forward, that we could see Milwaukee challenge with a lawsuit.
They could also find ways around what's put in the state law. So with the streetcar, for example, so you can't use taxes, property taxes. Doesn't say anything about federal money or state aid. The city is going to get a bunch more state aid in the shared revenue package. So can they find a way around that requirement by using other sources of funds for that? That's one big question. The other thing about the lawsuit or possible lawsuit is that it is chafing Republicans who say, look, we did this as basically a trade-off. We don't like how Milwaukee's doing business. That's the Republican mindset. You guys have created this problem over years. Obviously, Milwaukee feels like it's gotten short of the stick about shared revenue for years, but they get a higher per capita amount than most other communities. That said, Republicans feel like they don't want the rest of the city is going. They want to change that. They're going to give you the money, Milwaukee, as long as you do something more like what we like. So they're unhappy because to them it's part of the deal. The mayor and county executive are part of the negotiations. They don't like those provisions, but they're willing to accept them in negotiations to get this lifeline financially to stave off possible bankruptcy, essentially, to cover the ongoing pension costs and keep the city and county afloat.
Right, and that's what this sales tax money will go towards. I mean, most of it, the chunk of the change that is raised by it, will fix the pension obligations that the city has to pay off. The other will be funding safety positions, fire departments, police departments as well. Opponents, though, I even went to Milwaukee this week to talk to just, you know, some average residents. Hey, did you even know about this tax? What do you think about it? I think hearing about, oh, my taxes are going up, a lot of people are just frustrated. I mean, given inflation, given other things that are going on in the world, they just feel like I don't want to pay this additional cost, and why should the burden fall on me? Other people who knew about the sales tax were also saying, well, you know, the city and county officials were in a tough position. They didn't really have much choice to have these other additional provisions and tied to this package as well, but they had to do something. So some others that I spoke to were, they understand why there was this increase. So going forward, now the attention, like I said, just kind of shifts to the County Board of Supervisors, who on July 27th, a lot of supervisors told me they're hinting at that is when they will take the vote. So could be closing the chapter on this.
Don't forget, sales taxes aren't just paid by residents. Visitors to Milwaukee pay for that as well. Important for Milwaukee as in place in 24 because you have a big convention coming to town in August 2024. Lots of visitors, lots of attention, lots of money being spent that can capture some of the additional money from the sales tax increase.
All right. Let's move on to a bill that was reintroduced this week that addresses transgender athletes participating in girls and women's sports. The bill was reintroduced by Representative Dietrich and Senator Knodel. And what it would basically do, it would ban transgender athletes from participating in women's sports teams at K-12 schools and college campuses. The bill also largely mirrors two bills from 2021 that aim to restrict transgender sports participation. It's also important to note, too, it might have better chances this year, JR, because it passed the Assembly last year, but it got stuck in the Senate mm-hmm. because it was never advanced out of committee due to one vote.
Well, Joan Baldwig, who actually chaired a mental health task force from the Assembly when she's back there, voted against the bill in her committee. It was a 2-3 vote. Now, bills that get negative votes in committee can still go to the floor, but Baldwig's lack of support in committee just kind of put a pall on that bill. The other thing, too, is even if you get it passed this session, Governor Evers has basically pledged to veto it before. He'll probably veto it again, so it won't go anywhere. It's basically a talking point, right? It is popular. Look at the Marquette Law School poll. I think 70% of people want to see...
71%, yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Only those, the gender you were assigned at birth, to participate in those sports. So that's not really a controversial issue for most people, but it is a core issue for Evers and the Dem base about, like, they're not going to accept this kind of a bill.
It's kind of a key social issue mm-hmm. because we've seen over 20 states, Republican-led largely, pass a similar measure like this. We also saw Congress, I believe it was in March, House Republicans passed the same bill that would do roughly around the same restrictions in place. And also, you have to talk about, you know, when you hear from Democrats and LGBT groups and advocates that I spoke to, they just feel like this is an attack against mm-hmm. the transgender community. They call these bills harmful because they want everyone, regardless of how you identify, to participate in sports, especially when you're growing up at a younger age. That's kind of their argument. You want to be included in things. You want to be discluded. So looking ahead, like you said, the bill is likely to be vetoed by Governor Evers. So, but it just brings forth back the discussion. When I talked to Representative Dietrich, she said, listen, I'm not trying to insult anyone. You know, we're trying to just have everyone included here. But she wants to bring this forth to basically give a voice, she says, to female athletes who feel like they're at a disadvantage when they are participating against someone who identifies as a female but was born male.
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead on this issue to political piece of it, put aside like the law, you know, what's right and wrong, morally, all that kind of stuff. Politically, I just don't know this issue is a driver of people at the polls versus how are you doing with your job? what's your tax bill like? Abortion. Like, I don't know how much of a driver issue it is as much as it's a popular one, much like we talked about redistricting, for example, for years. Hugely popular in the Marquette poll to have a nonpartisan commission draw the lines. But on the outside of a core group of people, it drives the narrative in an election. Same way with this. I don't know what drives an election result next fall to have this be a top issue for anybody.
Also important to note, there's already policies in place at Wisconsin schools. The WIA has a policy in place that if you are a transgender individual and want to participate on a sports team, you have to have at least 1 year of hormone testing. It's very similar to what the NCAA also enacted as well, to have some proof of documentation as well before you start competing. All right, now we're going to get to some news that happened last Friday after we taped the show, which often happens, yep, sometimes, but it deals with the abortion lawsuit. So here's what happened. Dane County Circuit Court Judge Diane Schlipper denied a motion to dismiss the lawsuit challenging the state's 1849 criminal abortion ban. So this request was from the defendant, who is the Sheboygan County District Attorney Joel Ermansky, who argued back in May that Attorney General Josh Call, who brought forth this lawsuit, was asking a judge to perform the duties of lawmakers, and he argued that Call was ignoring efforts by Republicans to repeal the law. So this move basically means that the case will proceed. Mm-hmm. But always with this case, the timeline is important.
So first up, there's the Call challenge the lawsuit. Then there's the interveners, the doctors, a group of doctors who perform abortions that say, look, this is a jeopardy to us. If we were to perform something, we'd get in trouble. Schlipper's decision focuses entirely on the arguments of the doctors, which is that the law in place since 1849 does actually refer to abortion. It's about infanticide. All right. So there's this deep dive into a 1994 Supreme Court decision by Wisconsin justices that looked at that law, the wording of the law, when a case of a man who had punched a pregnant woman in the stomach and led to the death of the unborn child. That decision said, look, this one piece of 1849 law says to us, the justice of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, it's all about infanticide. It's not about abortion. This isn't about the right to an abortion. It's all about this piece. So Schlipper's saying, well, these two provisions are basically identical. If the court said that's about not abortion, then this isn't either. Okay, so there's that. There's this one line in the decision, though, that's really kind of interesting. It says that arguments about this law applying to abortion are dismissed with prejudice. Now, nobody I talked to is quite sure what that means, okay? Because remember, Call's argument is all about, like, the law has been not enforced in so many years because of various factors that it's not enforceable anymore, that state law has been updated since 1849. Those laws take precedence, therefore it's null and void. She didn't address those at all. So what I'm watching going forward are, one, will Schlipper address any of the Call stuff in her final decision? This is just basically a procedural thing. Rejecting the motion to dismiss. All her arguments about or her thoughts about this doesn't apply to abortion are sealing how she's going to end up, but they're not. There's no like weight of law behind it right now. We're waiting for a final order from her, which she's sealing how she's going to end up ruling. Then we go to likely the appeals court process, right? The appeals court take it up, then the state Supreme Court. Does this case put a guardrail on what the Supreme Court of Wisconsin considers? Only this question of does the law apply to abortion, period? Or if it gets to the justices, remember, Ermansky has to appeal in the first place. Does he want to appeal? Right, when it's all said and done, say, I want out of this thing. But if it gets to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, the justices say, look, we know this is the case before us, but we have the power, rarely used, to say, we want you to answer questions A, B, and C about stuff over here. That's going to be something to watch, what the court would do if it gets this decision, which is a long step from here. The timeline likely is briefing schedule next couple of months, decision by early fall, then we go from there. Republicans, by the way, would like to be done well before the November of 2024.
Bring that up. Yes.
They want to get this off the front burner for people as quickly as possible.
They don't want to be talking about it in 2024, given the U.S. Senate, yep, race, of course, the presidential race. We're a battleground state, and, you know, a lot of them are still upset the issue has not been resolved because they believe it was a key issue that hurt them in the midterm elections. All right, now, speaking of elections, we got one next week.
Yeah.
It's a special election in the 24th Assembly District, so we're just going to look ahead to that race. What are some of the key issues? Here are the two candidates. Republican Paul Melotyk, he is an Ozaukee County supervisor. And then the Democrat is Bob Tatterson. He's a retired engineer. They will face off next Tuesday for Wisconsin's 24th Assembly District. So this district includes portions of Washington, Ozaukee, and Washington counties. The Republican-leaning district, which was then held by Representative Dan Knoedl, who's now moved over to the Senate. He's represented it since 2008, and it used to include portions of Milwaukee County, but that was drawn out during the 2022 redistricting maps. So that's how it's just kind of shifted a little bit. What are some of the things that you're watching for, JR, in this race?
Well, one, Bob Tatterson shouldn't be competitive in the seat. He got 38.8% of the vote in 2022 against Knoedl. So on paper, there's not much of a reason for Dems to get excited about this. Yet somehow Tatterson outraised Melotyk 3-1 almost and up through July 3rd. That caught people's attention. Melotyk didn't really have a whole lot of donations, fewer than 50 for the entire campaign, whereas Tatterson raised more than 1,000. So he's been more aggressive raising money. That was interesting. But there's some backstory there. Remember, the Democrats challenged Melotyk's nomination papers, saying they weren't filled out properly. That was dismissed in early June, but it was appealed by the Democrats to the Dane County Circuit Court. That wasn't dismissed until mid-June, so it kind of compressed his window to focus on raising money and running because he's fighting a court battle. Looking ahead to Tuesday, there's not a single group that I've found who is playing in this race. Nobody's filed an independent expenditure report to say they're doing doors, doing mail, doing radio, nothing. It is basically a caucus-on-caucus doing doors race. What do I mean by that is, some Democrats, they're going in that district and doing doors. Senator Hulikins doing the same thing. And Republicans are relying on the nature of the district to kind of help them over the top. There's a lot of energy among Democrats still. So the thought is this might be a closer than you expect event or election result, but that Melotyk should win because the district is so Republican. The question going forward, though, is what's this seat look like next fall? So, again, we talked many times. We expect a decision by a lawsuit for the Supreme Court challenging the maps. What if the seat becomes competitive, all right? Big what if. Well, if it does, and Melotyk wins on Tuesday, a lot of ifs, he needs to up his fundraising game quite a bit. It's a competitive seat. What he's done for this race is not really acceptable for a contested race. Now, he'd get more help and everything else like that, but how strong might he be as a candidate going forward in a competitive environment? Little post note this morning, or actually yesterday, Republicans are doing a little bit late help for Melotyk. They're called in-kind donations. The Republican Assembly Campaign Committee, state GOP are both doing stuff for him, about $20,000 or so. So it's level the playing field a little bit. But Republicans are relying on the nature of that district to help him carry through on Tuesday.
It's almost a test, you know, to see how competitive it will be in the future. Mm-hmm. Also, typically might be a sleepy election, so don't expect high turnout. But you just never know. I mean, if you're having this many boots on the ground, people could get interested.
Yeah, people are kind of tired, though. I mean, talk to me on the horse. Like, look,
and it's midsummer.
It is midsummer, which is hard enough as it is. Yeah. Remember, the Supreme Court race this spring had a lot of attention, but there also was that special election for the Senate district that Knoedl won to leave this assembly seat on the same ballot. The voters of this district have been bombarded with stuff now basically since February. So they might want a little bit of a break. So I'm kind of curious what turnout's going to look like on Tuesday.
All right. Now let's get to stock picks. And rising this week is kind of the leftover in the state budget surplus. You know, when we started before the state budget, they had roughly about $7 billion. But now, after we got new projections, we now know after the state budget was basically calculated, there's about $4 billion left. So now the big question, JR, is does lawmakers come back and start spending that? Do they just hold off on it? That's the big question.
So remember last week I was saying that doing back-of-the-napkin math, we're like $3.5 billion. My math was off by a bit. So Fiscal Bureau did an analysis of what the results of the governor's vetoes are on the general fund going forward. That's the $4 billion number. Okay, so options. One option, Robin Vossian, the speaker, has said they'll come back in and pass the same exact tax cut and send it back to Evers if Senate Republicans will go along with that. Okay. Evers says he'll veto that. So that's not going to go anywhere. So could Republicans look at a different tax cut? There are all kinds of options. There's a marriage penalty. There's standard deduction. You could do a rebate, for example. Like Evers wanted that rebate plan that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Evers' plan, though, sort of phase out if your married couple is filing jointly, like $150,000 in income and $175-ish, $180. For Republicans, they want to go bigger. They want to help more people. So go back to the standard deduction. If you raise that on your filings, you help everybody, including the wealthy. Is that going to be acceptable for Evers? A rebate, $175,000 for income is not high enough for Republicans because they argue that you need to be more competitive with other states. You need a bigger cap on how high you'll go. So one, can you get agreement between the two caucuses, Republican caucuses, on what to do? Two, would Evers agree? Now, in talking to people, it's like, hey, there's an easy path here. You could pair a tax cut with money for child care subsidies. Evers, one of the core issues in this budget was about $330 million to provide subsidies, make it more affordable to get child care in Wisconsin. Republicans said no. Okay, why don't you marry them together? Well, there's a little problem right now. One is that Robin Voss, I'm a big fan of Tony Evers. So you'd have to get the two sides to talk, which is a challenge right now. Often happens after a budget, feelings are raw. So maybe give them a month or two. They're going to be off basically the rest of the month of July, most of August. Give them some time away from each other, let the tensions simmer down, and then figure, okay, is there a path forward? If not, then the next budget in 2 years, we start with $4 billion and then some to work with. It's the same conversation. Tax cuts, money for schools, what do we do with it? I know for Evers, I mean, we don't expect Evers to run again in 2026. Things could always change.
Right.
But he turns, I think, 76 right after the election in 2026. I have other things to do when I'm 76 than be in the Capitol. Most people do. So there's a thought, this could be his last budget, right? So the 2025-27 one, his legacy budget.
Yep.
He could go big with what he wants. Oh, by the way, more ifs, new map, Supreme Court, maybe a Democratic state Senate, maybe it pushes Republicans the assembly to get more. There's a lot of like what ifs you can play out in the system. So the big question watch now is, one, this fall, what do they do, Republicans, sending tax cuts back to Evers? Two, is there a deal? If not, where does that money go in 2 years? Because there'll be a big pot to play with.
Right. And I know we were just talking about the special election on Tuesday, but now we're going to look ahead to the third congressional district because we know for sure one candidate who's very familiar on the Democratic side is going to run again. And that is the mix this week. That is Rebecca Cook, who was in second place in the primary during the last time the race was up on the ballot. But there's also now a lot of lingering names out there for other possible Democratic candidates that can make the field quite bigger. But as of today, she is the only one who has officially filed.
And she ruffled feathers because back in November, like a week after the election, she said, I'm interested again. And she told us that it was politics that I think there should be a contested primary. Like we need to focus on one person going through Van Orden. The perception was she was trying to elbow everybody else out and say, this is mine. I'm going to go
getting out first. That's usually what you can do. Yeah.
So then she announces, ruffles feathers again because of all the other people floating around. So let's go through the list real quick. Brad Paff, all right, ran for the seat last time, state senator from Alaska, lost by 4 points. When the DCCC out in D.C. didn't spend money in that race, people argue, Democrats at least, that if they'd spent money invested, he could have won. We'll see. For Brad, there are two questions, actually two maps to worry about. One, there's a congressional map. There could be a challenge filed at the Supreme Court of Wisconsin again to change these lines. That might make the district more competitive for Democrats. But also, there's the one for the legislature. If there's a path to flip the state Senate for Democrats, might be more attractive for Brad to stay in the Senate and be in that role than then taking a shot at the congressional seat. And, oh, by the way, giving up his seat in the legislature to run. Then there's Katrina Shanklin, state lawmaker from Stevens Point. She's exploring it. She, remember, Stevens Point is attached to the third by this kind of arm of red territory. Again, if the map changes, you could lop off Stevens Point, move east toward Dane County, get a little more Democratic. A lot of ifs. So she's exploring, keeping her options open as she goes through the process. Deb McGrath, who ran in 2022, she's thinking about it again. Seriously, she says. There's like this kind of feeling among people I talked to that there's some establishment Democrats kind of moving toward her because of her profile. Former CIA officer, former captain, I think, in the Army. They like that profile against Van Orden, who was a former Navy SEAL. Problem is, she had that profile in 2022 and finished third in the primary, a distant third, 19%. She has to get better on the stump, better campaign, better messaging, better people around her to take advantage of those opportunities. Then you have Tara Johnson, La Crosse County, former La Crosse County board chair. She says she's looking at it. Talked to her this week as well. The question, though, for her is, what's her lane? You have several female candidates looking at running, so it wasn't like, you know, be the only woman in the race. What's her experience? What's her real calling here? Then you have Missy Hughes, the CEO and secretary of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. she's kicking the tires. Now, she hasn't talked to anybody yet. She's keeping it kind of low profile. But she's from Viroqua in the district. A couple of issues for her. One, she can talk business with anybody, right, as a WEDIC CEO. But she'd likely have to give up her seat or her position in the Evers administration to run. Can she go without a paycheck to run for how many months for that seat? Oh, by the way, how'd she be on the stump? You know, I mean, that's not easy to be a first-time candidate for a seat like this. So there's all kinds of moving pieces over there. And the third, that probably the next couple months will shake out a bit, but it could take some time to figure out who's going to challenge Derek or who the field is to challenge Van Orden next year.
Right, and it's always interesting to see when there's that many candidates, you know, running. I mean, like I said, Cook is the only one who officially first entered the race, but, you know, I think we listed off about four or five others exploring or highly considering it. You know, is anyone going to take a jab at one another? That's just something we always watch for to see if that's how you're going to stand out against the pack. Generally, Democrats have this type of unity thing that will support whoever eventually is the nominee. But you never know. I mean, will Rebecca Cook go after someone since she's been here first? It'll be interesting just to watch.
Cook announced she raised $100,000 first 3 days after announcing. Now, by comparison, she announced in October of 2021 for that 2022 race. She raised $158,000 the first 3 months she's in the race. So, yes, she's ruffled some feathers by being aggressive and kind of get in there. But if you are an aggressive candidate, you don't wait for somebody to tell you it's your turn. You go out and get it. So she's aggressively pursuing this. And, you know, the money speaks to her work. She got a little nice little number, a little bump getting in there.
All right, let's go to Falling this week. And I think we're going to get a little bit in the weeds here. But it is the town's road funding that we're talking about due to a veto by Governor Evers.
So all the governor's vetoes, like the 51 of them, most attention was on the 400-year one and the tax cuts, right? You go through that document, there's lots of little ones. There's one I could not figure out at first, but I figured it out finally. So there is a thing called general transportation aids. It helps local governments pay for road work, right? Maintenance, snow plowing, all that kind of good stuff. The governor proposed a 4% increase in these various pots of money for local governments. That includes the mileage rate. So when you're a small community, you have an option to do the mileage rate, which pays you per mileage rate per mile, or the shared cost model, okay? The governor had a 4% increase, all these pots. The legislature sent him back increase of 2%, all of these pots. He still vetoed the mileage rate, which was smaller than the one that he wanted, which makes you go, why? Now, the towns are hopping mad because this is going to be more money for them to pay for road work. They're saying, what is going on here? You guys messed up. Well, let's get in those weeds a little bit. So, yes, this is a reduction for towns because that pot of money, though, doesn't go up or down. So all the money that's available for local governments is still the same. So what's one thing that's confusing, because reading the veto message, there's no fiscal impact of that change. All it means, though, is if you take one, the mileage rate versus a shared cost rate, the mileage rate money, the $10 million bucks roughly that was going to be increased, goes more toward the shared cost people, who are a little bit bigger communities. Oh, the poor towns, the poor towns, the poor towns. However, the towns are getting a 154% increase in shared revenue in this first year of this shared revenue deal. What do towns spend some money on? Roads. They don't have like big police departments or big staffs. They mostly are taking care of roads. Oh, by the way, there's also this agricultural road program, brand new in the budget, $150 million. Where are most agricultural roads located in Wisconsin? Towns. So they're really unhappy about this $10 million. But if you look big picture, there's a lot of money going into towns to help them pay for these things. At the same time, you know, nobody's expecting this veto. It wasn't like a clear one. And if you get really deep in the weeds,
let's keep going.
Evers raised an objection because back in 2011, during Act 10, there's this kind of like change in some transportation money, and bigger governments took a hit. And the argument was, well, they got these tools to address costs through Act 10, right? Because they could lower the pension costs for various public employees, and they could absorb that reduction. Towns didn't have to. And Evers is saying there's an inequity there because of what happened 12 years ago with this. Now, the flip side is towns don't have police departments. They don't have big fire departments. So they don't. That's way, 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 way deep in the weeds. But the bottom line is towns are not happy, but they've got other things to be okay with in this budget and what happened with them.
In the end. All right. Well, that will do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.